Emerson Napsinger, University of Illinois, last presentation before our panel, in-season N fertilizer on soybean, where's the yield?
Well, there isn't one. Any questions? We're done. No, you know that there may be a yield, and I'm glad to be last. Okay, I'll say I'm glad to be last. but think what we're doing here today, people. We've got a great crop here. It's going to yield a whole bunch this year. We had good conditions. It's going to yield 56 bushel per acre average in the state of Illinois. That's, those of you who speak metric, that's 3.8 tons per hectare. and we want to figure out how to put nitrogen fertilizer on it, increasing the cost of production. Isn't that great? This is really what it's all about, taking something, a great gift that's been given to us, and trying to improve on it. So that's what we're talking about today, and I'll have a few ideas, I guess, at the end. But some of it will be a repeat of what others have said, and we're not going to dwell on some of these things very much. But I make the point now, and I'll make the point at the end, that nitrogen-deficient soybeans are a mighty rare sight in the state of Illinois and in most of the states where and countries where most of you come from. And I think that ought to be a first hint to us that maybe, just maybe, they don't need the fertilizer. They do need a lot of nitrogen. A lot of speakers today have talked about this. I don't need to reiterate it. I'm going to use all. I took the liberty. I've been around longer than any of you have, so I took the liberty to put this off in English units. If you need to convert them in your head, that's why I did it, so you'd get some mental exercise. Divide the bushels per acre by 15, and that gives you tons per hectare. So, you know, and 330, multiply that times 1, there's 12% more kilograms per hectare than there is pounds per acre, so you can add that in your head as well. But they take up a lot, and quite a bit of that ends up in the seed, and we all know this. That's what we're here to talk about, the great demand for nitrogen that this crop has. The fixation process in nodules, it takes energy. And it's really not clear to me whether soybean plants have this energy to spare. My suspicion is they do. And this goes back a little bit to my days at Purdue University back more than 40 years ago, or 40 years ago now. And my advisor there, John Thorne, Ron Kohler, was my advisor, and they did some interesting experiments. We were able to measure photosynthetic rates. And some of you might have remembered reading about this, but they covered up, one of the simple ones was they covered up a plant all with foil, except they left one leaf sticking out. And that leaf was really cranking away with photosynthesis. And then I did some work where we showed if a leaf accumulated starch during the a period before you measured photosynthetic rates, if the starch rates got too high, starch amounts in the leaf, it reduced photosynthetic rates. Well, starch accumulates out in soybean fields pretty much in the summertime every night, or every day, and it goes away at night. Cool nights are bad for soybeans because the starch content stays up and it starts out the next day with a higher starch content. Now these starch granules are visible, and this isn't a lesson in anatomy or physiology of the soybean leaf, but think about the possibility that the soybean plant, you know, does what it does or doesn't do more than it does because there's not enough challenge put on those leaves. I know we talk about it being source limited. I think soybeans actually tend to be sink limited fairly often. And I suspect if you could paste more pods on plants, we'd usually get higher yields because they'd respond by putting in more yield. In other words, photosynthetic rates could be higher. I'm going to guess that might be possibly the case for nitrogen fixation as well. The nitrogen forms a fixed nitrogen. It's an organic form, not nitrate or ammonia. ammonium, and this might be an advantage to the plant, I don't know. And soybeans are a net user of soil nitrogen. We've all heard that. Several people have said that today. They only fix what they need to make up the difference. And yes, that should change a lot with different soil types. In our soils in Illinois, the ones with deep topsoil, you know, 4% organic matter, 15 inches deep, certainly don't have any problem providing, say, 150, maybe in good years, even 200 pounds of nitrogen to the crop. So that adds into it as well. So why are we talking about nitrogen on soybeans? Why now? The increase in yields means there's more nitrogen uptake, more demand for nitrogen. The idea persists that a lot of biological nitrogen fixation must mean less photosynthetic or grain production. Thanks. Most high yield proponents are using nitrogen, sometimes a lot of nitrogen. You have comparisons with low or no nitrogen, so you know it's just I put it on, I got high yields, it must have helped. This is a very popular thing today. Stoller Enterprises, Jerry Stoller, recently announced 217 bushel yield after using 601, not just 600 pounds of nitrogen per acre. A lot of us saw that. I got abused some by that, you know, it happened in some place in the south end of Texas somewhere. And this, you know, I think Larry Purcell asked that question, is this the kind of thing we want to be doing? Well, 217 bushels, a lot of yield. And we'll let that one rest for the moment. But there's promotion by commercial input suppliers. And it's a little bit surprising, given that nobody has ever come out and said, when you put nitrogen on soybeans, you know, at 100 pounds per acre, you can expect, you know, 6.8 bushel more yield. Nobody has broadcast these numbers because they don't really exist. I think we have a human need to take credit for high yields as resulting from something we did, and that's the other push on this at this point. So I'm going to talk to you about three different sort of sets of trials. I broke them down. excuse me. You'll see these as we go through. There were three different projects in this one. We ran this one from 2010 to 2013. All had N applied as urea, urea plus agritane and/or ESN. Some of these were mixed sources. Urea plus agritane is protected against urease inhibitor. If you're putting something on top, it just assures its availability for a little bit longer. And we were generally using 120 to 200 pound rates of urea, 54 to 90 pounds of nitrogen, and applied either once or twice, sometime between mid-vegetative and mid-reproductive growth. These were small plot trials. Here's my summary of those, and that's all the detail I'm going to give you. This is the summary of those. I've got them broken down. Some of you who know Illinois know these are codes for some of our research centers. So we did them all over the place at different research centers. The ones that have the numerous ones with the asterisk on them were ones where nitrogen gave a significant yield. On average, it's pretty much a flat deal. And we did get one here at Monmouth 1 year. That's a significant 6 or 7 bushel, half a ton or less, 4/10 of a ton of yield increase per hectare. Well, one of the things that's part of this whole deal, you've heard about it this afternoon, is that when you get high yields, that's when that plant is sort of left gasping for nitrogen. For adding nitrogen is really going to help. It's in line with the idea that photosynthesis amounts are going to limit both yield and nitrogen fixation. So I had to plot them out this way. I didn't really expect to see what I saw. What do you see there? A lot of support for that idea. Oh, out here at 90, that's 6 tons per hectare. We don't see any support for the idea that high yield levels this is just the average of the with and without nitrogen, increases the probability of a response to nitrogen. In fact, so this is where statistics came in real handy. You know, we couldn't tell there was a relationship until I drew the line. I found that it was significant. And this says that the, actually, and that one up there is the one significant one. I didn't call it an outlier for this purpose. And I don't think this, you know, necessarily proves this, but it certainly ought to make you wonder whether high yields are the ones that are going to respond to more nitrogen. It makes you wonder, right? At least it raises the question. Here's a second set of trials. One of the things you hear about nitrogen is, well, when water's limiting, you know, then nothing else much matters, or when water's not limiting, then nitrogen or things like that ought to be able to produce their response. So irrigating soybeans in East Central Illinois is one of those things we kind of just do for exercise. You know, our soils are so good at providing water. This last year, you know, our average rainfall during the summer is 4 inches. That's 100 millimeters per month. And that's really enough to make a pretty good crop of either corn or soybeans. And this last year was no exception. We've had some dry years, some wet years in the last few, and I'll show you the results of irrigation. Within each irrigation treatment, with or without, we put on urea at 100 pounds of urea per acre at R3, R5, and R6. So we were dosing this up three times with a total of 135 pounds of nitrogen. We were leaving no stone unturned here. This is Josh Funk, one of my students, it's his PhD work. Ran it for 3 years. As I just talked to you, this is one study. This is a second study. The one that's underway now is Josh's study. And it's basically the same, except our nitrogen treatments are a little bit different. We only put it on twice in this last 3 year study. And there was 1 year of hiatus. So I know this is kind of messy. I could have just showed you the average, but I wanted you to see two things. First of all, you can see on here, the first two bars are not irrigated. The second two bars are each year and on average. And the second of each pair of bars had nitrogen fertilizer, and you can see, and the first one did not. So there's the, you can look at it across there. 08, 09, and 2010 were all pretty good years. We were able to increase yields a little bit in 2008. We weren't able to increase yields in 09 and 2010. And you can see that nitrogen did a little bit sort of sporadically here, but on average it really didn't do much of anything. So averaged over these 3 years, neither irrigation nor nitrogen helped us, and there certainly wasn't any interaction between the two. This is a contemporary set of data now. This is the same setup as I just showed you. Remember, this only had urea put on it twice, not three times. Irrigation gave us a pretty substantial yield increase in 2012, a very dry year, by the way. Remarkable to produce yields like that in a year when it basically forgot to rain for May and June and July, and then it rained in August, and where you had good soil moisture enough to keep it going, it did pretty well. But we got a nice yield increase from irrigation that year. We got a yield increase in 2013. We did not get a yield increase in the trial that was just harvested the other week. And in no case did nitrogen really do anything for yield, either in irrigated or not in irrigated. So the second set and the first set gave us basically the same message. And I tried to chart it out looking for clues, you know, that were hidden here. And I don't think I really found any. There's some reason here that the non-irrigated, you can see a high correlation between yield level and response to nitrogen. The thing is, none of these nitrogen responses were significant. So that does make you wonder a little bit. And then the irrigated one, for some reason here, you know, it had some decreases, at least they look like decreases. And we'll return to this theme just a little bit more, at least when I give you my summaries. So the 2014, this is the third set of studies that I'm going to talk about now. And these were just done this year, and then I found something in one study that's been ongoing. Josh went to his home areas north of Peoria near the Illinois River on some sandy soil, and he said, I'll go and put these things on in fields that my relatives are farming there. And so that's what he did. So he did an irrigated and non-irrigated with and without urea and 40 pounds of nitrogen. And he decided to put salt, make sulfur as part of it. So that's in as a treatment as well. We did a big study at 2014 with multiple treatments. I'm not going to talk about many of the treatments there, but I'll describe it a little bit, at least with results. And then we'll talk about a study that's been in place for over 30 years at Monmouth, soy corn rotation with N rates on the corn only from 0 to 240. And we have been measuring much to, and I'm glad we have, the yields of soybeans in the off year, the year between fertilized corn years. This is the study that Josh reported from the on-farm work just in this last week or so. And this, I don't know exactly why irrigated soybeans didn't yield any more than dry land, but you can tell it was a pretty good year for in a sandy soil to get yields like this. He didn't find a response to nitrogen in either one of these studies. In the dry land, you can see that the sulfur actually gave a yield boost, a significant one, not the nitrogen. Sulfur's for another day. The big study I talked about, this doesn't show up particularly well, but one of the treatments included putting a urea on at planting time, and it gave a visible effect. Here's the four rows that had urea put on them, and you could see it really clearly, and if you just walked past this or drove past the study, you could see we were all excited, you know, our heart was in our throat, that we were going to see a big yield increase here, because these things were going to, I'm probably giving away what we found here. Here's the results. So we had, this is the application that I mentioned, 100 pounds of urea, so 45 pounds of nitrogen each time. Here's the ones we put on in single applications, none, once, at planting, R1, R3, R5, none of those produced any yield effect at all. We were able, take a note, we produced a yield increase with nitrogen on soybeans. We only had to put it on four times. So that's 180 pounds of nitrogen. Flying that on with the airplane would have cost about a third of the value of the crop. And probably about five times the value of the yield increase that we got. So we had full year nitrogen in that study as well. I think I agree with Larry's statement, the quantities you're putting on just don't really come up. You know, they're gone in a flash, as it were. Maybe, just maybe, there could be something physiological about them, but certainly we didn't find anything with putting those on this year in this study. And it was kind of a pilot study. We're hoping to repeat that and come back with it. This is the serendipity one that I told you about. I was looking at these a few months ago, and I noticed that there seemed to be sort of a response of soybeans to what nitrogen rate had been put on corn the year before. Why would that make any sense? This is the average over 28 years. We had a couple years when we were missing, and this was a pretty consistent response. It dropped from the zero nitrogen on corn to the 60-pound rate, and then it went up with what looks a lot like just a corn nitrogen response, except it's not very large. you can see here, you know, it's only a few bushel increase. So I went in and looked. I just looked at the last 9 or 10 years of this. This is what in those soils corn nitrogen responses look like, corn following soybean. No nitrogen put on these at any time since before the study started at the zeros on the corn. So here's the soybean, these are the corn yields. I'm just showing you what the corn yield responses look like. Here was, you know, a rather unusual one where we had 227 or 8 bushel corn yields with no nitrogen. But on average, we were in that 160 bushel of corn range. That's 10 tons per hectare. corn weighs less per bushel than soybeans. But this is, you can see what kind of responses we have. Well, this is a little bit of jumbled up mess, but I just showed you those same ones the year after that and showed you what the nitrogen responses for soybeans were. And you can see they wander all over the place. Here's a great big one here, just sort of randomly appearing in the year 2010, where it went from 55 bushel up to over 70 bushel as a responding to last year's nitrogen rates. And the average is this yellow one here, and it's actually a bigger response than I showed you over that 28 years. So in recent years, it does seem to be a larger response, but it's never consistent. And we just have some really odd years like this one you see here where it dips down, and putting any nitrogen on the previous corn crop was actually a yield loss to the soybeans. So it's a mysterious thing. I'll just show you one attempt so far to figure out why this is doing this. This is the difference in corn year yield we had the previous year from putting any rate of nitrogen on corn, the maximum difference. You can see we've added 20 to 100 bushel to the corn yields putting nitrogen on, and then this is the next year, how much response there was from, you know, the lowest yield with soybean to the highest one with nitrogen. Well, that's the 18 bushel that I showed you in 2009, but there's nothing here to see as far as I can tell at this point. Nothing about the corn response that says, well, the soybeans, you know, that you took all the nitrogen out or you left a bunch behind, and this is what the corn yield, the soybean yield do the next year. So I had to throw in this one. This is just the last year, just harvested. This was our 2013 corn response to nitrogen. This was our 2014, and I'll have to look at the current year and try to figure it out. But this was our soybean yield response in 2014 to last year's corn nitrogen rate, and we lost 15 bushels per acre if we put 120 pounds of nitrogen on compared to none. So this is going to have you thinking, you know, all evening, I know. I can tell just looking at you. You won't be able to enjoy anything. and it is. It's just one of those things. You know, these are real. I mean, these are statistical yield differences in most cases. It is a real effect, and I have no idea what it means. So let's sum up. Most of the time, there's no detectable yield increase from adding in-season and on soybean. Using urea-based products, including slow release at rates of 50 to 120 pounds of nitrogen per acre, applied sometime during the growing season, not real early, not real late. There is no indication that N responses are more likely or larger at high soybean yield levels. There is even a hint that I showed you, remember the negative pine, that the opposite might be true. We have a group of plant scientists and engineers at the U of I that say corn, they've discovered that soybeans have too much leaf area. Well, maybe they do sometimes. Do we with high nitrogen rates sometimes make more vegetative growth? I think most of you remember time seeing soybeans. 2003 was the premier year for this. Well, they were magnificent big plants, and they just didn't yield well at all. And do we contribute to that sometimes by putting nitrogen on? The carryover effect from corn, you saw, I just reiterated what I just told you. The response isn't consistent. I think it's a little more related to current conditions than to the previous response in corn. But the large, here's the point that makes it all moot. The large majority of soybeans in the Corn Belt follow nitrogen fertilized corn. Almost every field of corn gets nitrogen fertilizer, and so this response might be considered moot. Meaningless, put your own term on it. And I have, as I said, no explanation for it. So if N doesn't increase yield, then maybe agronomists need to reconsider promoting this, like having sessions like this, directly or indirectly, as a way to raise yields. I think, you know, farmers are really hungry for being told things that will probably, you know, man, that might help. We just had a new yield record set on by a farmer in Illinois this year, 104 bushels per acre. That's almost 7 tons per hectare. One of the statements that he is quoted as saying is, I know that to get yields like that, above 70 bushel, you have to use nitrogen fertilizer. That was his quote, pretty much a direct quote. Where did he get that? I have no idea, but somebody told him. We need to remember that adding nitrogen to soybean fields increases the amount of the nitrogen lost to the environment, and I think Larry made that point very well. Perhaps we should try to determine if there are any signals from the plant or the soil telling us when a response might be more likely. Maybe. We ought to try to figure that out, and we're going to start doing that. Is nitrogen fixation a big drag on soybean yields? Well, I guess I suspect not, and I mentioned this earlier on. Estimates vary. If we use a 12-to-1 ratio of sugar used to nitrogen fix, on a day when soybean accumulates 5 pounds of nitrogen per acre, that's a lot, it would take about 60 pounds of sugar, and that might be about 5% of gross photosynthesis for that day. Seasonally, that percentage could be a little bit higher. Probably not. And as I suggested, photosynthetic rates might just respond to the demand. Are we focusing on the wrong thing, I think, is a better question. Might an effect of nitrogen be more on physiological processes, especially senescence signaling, rather than on plant nutrition itself? This is for your further consideration. Plants do not, and Larry Purcell mentioned this, do not senesce normally in some of the, I called it a dump and hope system, that's not very nice, but and require desiccation. Kip Cullors has been saying that for years. He desiccates his crop in October. So somehow the senescent signal either is getting muted or something. I like the picture you showed, Larry, that showed some mature pods, though, when these leaves were still had some green. So there, the senescent signal is sort of there, but maybe it's getting overwhelmed by something else. And we have seen some extended green from nitrogen or fungicides or the combination that doesn't result in any extra yields. Maybe it mostly comes down to pod number and the demand on the plant for that. That's my message. Seeing nitrogen deficient soybeans, as I said earlier, is rare indeed, and maybe we ought to take that as a hint. Thanks.
All right, we'll have a panel here in a minute as we take a break, but is there a question for Emerson? Anyone has?
It's more common. It's like the plant has already figured this out anyway, and then the source-to-sink relationship that it's always been, that you apply more N, that gets more photosynthesis, pumps more photosynthate into the seed. The seed's not needing more nitrogen to grow. Sean already showed that in data. And then the breeders have inadvertently cashed in on that by selecting plants that are looked greener later that have the greater nitrogen concentration. So, yeah, breeders have done a good job, but just didn't know why. And Sean can still explain that, basically by showing that, yeah, we are getting more leaves on the plants later when we need them.
It's not the first time I've heard it said that breeders can do good work without knowing what they're doing. But I kind of agree, and my statement when I said some people have discovered that soybeans have too much leaf area, I kind of wondered, you know, why they've been selected for that. I think Sean showed that the leaf nitrogen content has increased. I think that's has to be a good thing because it becomes available later in the season. It might actually come down, you know, but don't ask me how to get there, but if we could increase the pod number or the demand draw on that plant later in the season, I suspect that that would be one way to get higher yields. But I don't know how to do that very easily. Thanks.
Thank you, Emerson. Well, I thank everybody for attending here. We've had one last... Sean Conley had popped his head in once in a while. This is kind of for him, partly. And for C3, we're supposed to indicate that this was a session sponsored by C3, Crop Ecology, Management, and Quality, and encourage you all to join if you're not a member of C3 now. But thank you, everybody. We had a standing room crowd the whole afternoon. And we'll take a little break here now. And then just to get set up, and some of you have been sitting here for 3 or 4 hours. And then we'll get some chairs set up and have a panel. We're talking to people about some 2.5. Okay.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like 2.5. No. And then we'll discuss. Are there research ideas that remain that Emerson left both a closed door and a glimmer of possibility?
Thank you.
more discussion. We've got Laura's going to lead some discussion to prompt some follow-up steps. And I'll hold that closer. Yeah, Ignacio coming up. Fernando, we'll get our panelists here, and we'll get going. So Laura, I'll just let you lead out here while the panelists introduce themselves to each other.
Okay. Thanks, Joel. So I think we had a really interesting symposium with a lot of great ideas. So in conclusion, we just wanted to generate new research, or even should we be doing more research in this area, I guess, first of all. But we wanted just to generate some new ideas. I know this has been done a lot, nitrogen application of soybeans, and see where do we go from here. So two of our panelists were speakers that you heard earlier, and then we have two new faces. So I'm going to have all of you guys introduce yourself one more time. And if you could just give maybe a brief, I know it's scary asking people to be brief because they never are, but a brief couple minutes where you think the future of this type of work is, if there is one.
All right, thank you. Fred Milo from the University of Illinois. So we don't all believe the same thing as the University of Illinois. I think soybean does need more nitrogen, especially under high yield. You know, I do the math, it's 4 or 5 pounds of N per bushel, so hard for me to think that if I can get more in the plant, it won't make some difference. And I think the problem is this inhibition of fixation that we heard about. So what I want to do is supplement fixation with nitrogen fertilizer in some ways. I don't necessarily want the amounts we heard from a research standpoint, but I want that little bit to go a long way. And I'm intrigued by the idea that when you give the soybean plant urea, that urea molecule, it does not inhibit fixation. I mean, that's the way to select for a super hypernodulating mutant. Soybean plant is unique among plants, and it can actually take up urea molecule. If you look at the nodule of the soybean root, it's loaded with urease, loaded with peptocarboxylase. I don't have any idea why, but I'm convinced that what soybean does is it can take up urea, it can cleave it, it can fix it. It's organic, and at that point, it supplements fixation. So I'll tell you the common denominator around where soybean does, where nitrogen does increase soybean yield, has something to do with urea. So I'm going to speculate to the idea that soybean ships ureas as the final product.
Okay, well, Fernando Zaragoza from Argentina. Well, you say what is the prospect for this?
Yeah.
Well, it's very clear, I think, about the information, about the small role of nitrogen fertilization in nitrogen different soils. So, except we will have physiological constraints for the plants, that like drugs, or we have a result that is not working very well. So, in this case, it's very clear that we have to fertilize. I think that we have to score more on high demanding nitrogen crops, in this case soybean. I think that finding an indicator is very difficult to find an indicator, soil or plant indicator, to say when I have to add fertilizer. Because we are working with a very, very small amount of possible response to nitrogen. So we don't have very huge amounts. So, and at the same time, we are working with a bacteria that is working with nitrate that is inhibiting them, so we are applied. So there is a big, big and huge interaction between bacteria, plants, and environments. So there is lots of agronomic and soil stuff that is work is all mixing there, and it's very difficult to understand. But I think if we can find some kind of indicator, this is one way to stop. And the second one is we present a lot of information on seed yield. We didn't present anything on seed quality, seed protein, what happened with fertilization, etc. I think that is another avenue to explore.
My name is Larry Purcell. I'm from the University of Arkansas. I guess my take on this whole thing is I think the jury's still out a little bit on the response of yield to nitrogen fertilizer. And the big message I want to get home is I think that environmentally this is a crazy idea with the tools we have now. There's very little indication whatsoever that we can expect a consistent response. There's very little indication that we know how to do it. And I think there's every reason in the world to think that we shouldn't do it. I don't want EPA coming down and telling farmers what to do with nitrogen fertilizer in our crops. And I think that without clear indication that we know how to do this, we're encouraging farmers. They're looking for hints on, like Emerson said, on things that they can do to give them that little bump. And I think that we should be discouraging them and telling them not to. The plant, the crop, soybean crop, has great potential for yields. If we can get our yields up to 4.5 tons, we're doing pretty dang good. I don't think we haven't ever had a year like that in the United States before. A lot of it comes to managing the crop. Nitrogen fixation under good conditions can give you that 4 to 4.5 ton yield potential. And the big thing that's holding that back in most cases is soil moisture availability. And that's really the key part. There may be a genetic potential there for improving crop performance as far as nitrogen fixation under drought. But I don't think that increasing farmers' costs by applying nitrogen fertilizer and increasing problems by nitrogen fertilizer to another crop is the answer.
Okay,
Miami
Steve Nesbitt from Kansas State University. We do have experience this year. We have some experience on the system application. We are not seeing a consistent response. I think that probably we agree with Fernando and Larry in that case. We do have yields that were very close to 80, which is great here. So I think that one of the main points that I would like to emphasize, and I think I would like to take some of the messages from Sean Castillo, Larry, and Fernando, is a couple of things. The first one is when we are thinking about the physiology of the plant. So, I mean, I think that we still have a chance to take a look back to all the information that Sean was collecting. So now we know and have some more idea of where is the moment, where is the main organ that is accumulating more nitrogen. So we also are taking a look at some of this information from the past on the N uptake on soybeans, and we are seeing something similar to what Sean is looking at this point. So we are seeing that we may improve, as the breeders, may improve very well the grain harvest index. But when you're looking at the end harvest index, that might be one of the main avenues to improve, for example, the availability of nitrogen inside of the plant. So, and that's one of the points when, for example, when we are seeing high yielding soybeans, we are seeing that most of the times they are related to low protein levels. And that's what Fernando mentioned before. So when you are looking at the increasing nitrogen use efficiency in corn, we are not talking so much about soybeans. I mean, everything is coming to the same point that, yeah, you can increase efficiency in sorghum or corn, soybeans. The way to do it is probably, with a reduction in the protein level. So I think that we need to take a look at the protein level also. And then, so the harvest index is the one point I think that we should probably take a look at, the harvest index in soybeans. And then another thing that I think that we should probably have a much better approach is really to have a much better measurement of the fixation. So I think that we have some idea about biological fixation, but I think that we need to have a much better approach how we can do estimations on the own farm, about fixation. So I think that we need to get real numbers and not real numbers that are coming from a small plots. And then for that reason, maybe we need to probably compare, maybe go to do some of the work that Sean was doing in the past, maybe comparing some of the old varieties to smaller ones and see really how much we improve on the fixation. But at the own farm scale, I'm not talking about small plots or greenhouse trials. So I think that we have a couple of avenues before exploring the idea of trying to emphasize and applying and in soils. And the last point that I'm seeing from most of the researchers, something that we are here, we don't have that much information about high yielding soils. And that Fernando, that review paper is showing that. When you take a look at that review paper, the highest point is what? Probably 5,000 kilograms, 5 tons. I mean, I'm not saying that we don't have those numbers. I'm saying that when it takes a look to the grain yield and then uptake, more when we are thinking about infestation, we are not having the numbers that we are talking about 80 and 100 bushels. Maybe, Larry, you have those numbers about whole plant uptake. The literature review that Fernando was doing, is just coming in 5,000 grams. So we basically all the numbers that are off about those numbers, I mean, we don't have them. So.
I will tell something about the from the MLA revision. Is that most of the paper that reviewed was not done by alumnus. So when you collect information about nitrogen infestation, there were people for biologists, or because nitrogen infestation is very close associated with the biology more than, I don't know why, but in there. So most of the crops that I included in the analysis, for example, they were not planted to have the better agronomic practices. So they are just a soybean, and you measure how much nitrogen they fix. The other thing I found is that most of the nitrogen fertilization studies didn't measure nitrogen fixation. And that's the point. So I had to make two big data sets, one on nitrogen fertilization, another on nitrogen fixation, because I think that we need an interaction between the biologists and the physiologists and the soil scientists, because this is a big interaction between the three areas. So if you see, most of the information for nitrogen fixation comes up to 1995, more. There are a few later, but the most of the information. And most of it were not done by agronomists. And that's a good point, because we have to quantify nitrogen fixation in well-managed conditions, for example, and what happens in that part.
So at this point, we'd like to open up any questions. Emerson, you had your first hand.
If we had a good way to measure nitrogen fixation, would it really tell us very much? I mean, we've talked a lot about it, that we assume it must be inadequate at high yield levels, but we don't know that, right? And it usually it's going to provide whatever the plant takes up that isn't provided in somebody said the easy way, which is just taking it up. So is the goal of bypassing the limitation on fixation somehow or other, is that a goal worth pursuing?
About the form of missing nitrogen fixation, there are 3, 4, 5 missing methods. Every method has their limitations. In Argentina, we are now using the natural abundance of liquid nitrogen, for example, that is very easy. Not that expensive, but if you want that information.
Tell us what you found.
No, we found that we made a survey in the Argentina, it will be published soon, and you have to put a marker, a crop that mark in the marker of 1915 and the crop, the soil crop, and you can, in the field, it's an easy task. You have all the details. You have the UBI. The UBI I use the UBI method for the nitrogen. It's time consuming. You have it depends on the framing that you have, or what the objective. I think it can be possible.
What's the nitrogen reduction cost if it takes up nitrogen? What's the energy cost to convert nitrate to a reduced
I think we can decide it, but. In my dissertation, I made a revision about how much energy you need to replace nitrogen fixation against uptake in nitrous. There is one word by Basil, and there are several assumptions in their calculations. And there is, in their calculations, they say that you have a little more energy for. But when you revise the whole numbers, it's not that much different. It's not that much different. There are a lot of assumptions about the bacteria, about the roots, and then how much the percentage nodules, for example, the total cost of the respiratory cost of the tank. So I can say that it's almost the same, the energy cost for the session. I don't know if you have heard about it.
The numbers are all over the place. If you look closely, there's some reports that say they're essentially equivalent or very close to equivalent, And there's other reports that give nitrogen fixation almost a 2 times cost. And those taken, and I'm not saying either one of them are wrong, I just think we don't know. But, you know, it's whether you account for the cost of building the nodule, the cost of maintaining the nodule, how rapidly those nodules turn over in the soil. They don't have, the soybeans have a deterrent nodule structure that doesn't continue to grow like a alfalfa nodule or something. And those nodules have a definite lifespan of about 35 days or so. So you're constantly putting on new nodules. And all of those goes into the calculations, and I don't think anybody knows really what a true comparison is between the two processes are.
How good are staples or not?
Very good. I mean, it comes back to, you mentioned the energy intensive nature. The two most energy intensive processes in plants, photosynthesis and nitrogen fixation. And they're essentially equivalent. I mean, as far as, you know, looking at ATP and production equivalents.
So, Ernestine, I think if there was a quick and dirty way to measure fixation, we could potentially identify those situations where fixation was compromised in some way by lack of nodule growth, or and those might be the cases where fertilization is warranted.
One way we're looking at it is to just take the soil samples and see how much nitrogen.
It's certainly dirty. I don't know if it's quick, but
it's somehow it's improved. But it, you know, I'm just looking for anything that would say, hey, if it's depleted in the middle of July, then it's because of that.
So in that case, if we can come up with some kind of indicator, then that may help target those conditions when a response might be warranted.
There was a lot of discussion about total and applied in the situation, but not a lot of discussion about duration or timing or distribution, I guess I should say that. And Larry talked about in terms of manure, and Emerson mentioned a little bit. There's a little mention of it pre-plant versus other. But what about, I mean, of all the research, manure studies have definitely provided the greatest, you know, response. And we can argue about the other factors in manure, but is this distribution a really critical piece? Is this spoon-feeding portion of manure or slow-release ends, is that an important component of the question, or is total end the question?
Yeah, so I'll take a first crack at that. I tend to think the slow-release component is important. Maybe it releases additional N without inhibiting fixation. So, and of course, manures are releasing it in organic form. I thought about the data Emerson showed where the rate of N in the previous corn crops seemed to have an influence. And that could be because there's actually more nitrogen in the residue of the previous corn crop that acts as a, you know, breakdown product to supply a slow release nitrogen to the soybean crop. So, I tend to think if it's going to be successful, it needs to be metered out season long over a longer period of time, not unlike a manure would do.
So that implies that there's some threshold that if we have below 6 millimolar concentration or something like this in the soil, that we're not inhibiting N fixation. Is that?
That would be my presumption. It becomes part of the trade-off, if you will. For some reason, mineralized N or any release from a breakdown of residue is a lot different than a synthetic fertilizer when it comes to the inhibition of fixation and the accumulation of nitrogen by the soybean crop. So I think if we're going to do it, it becomes a slow release problem, and part of it is managing the corn crop here before it appears.
I made this calculation before I came over here and I forgot. If I remember right, and somebody may be able to correct me, I think 1 millimolar, if you assume an acre per row slice is 2 million pounds, 1 millimolar is roughly about 45 pounds of N per acre. Does that sound right to anybody? I think that's right, 45 to 50 pounds of N per acre. So we're looking at 1% organic matter on soils or less where you are research. And so when you talk about 6 millimolar, God, that's a lot of nitrogen. That is a lot of organic matter mineralized, or that's a lot of nitrogen. And so I'm not sure that is in reality how important that is. But I do think, and I don't think we have an answer to this about the manure being a slow mineralized form. My hunch is that that's probably correct, that that probably does play an important role.
I think it depends on the manure source too. If you look at swine manure pits, I mean, they're 85-90% ammonia, so inorganic matter. You look at poultry litter, it's totally different.
Yeah,
it's true.
Are there E. coli
nodules? Are there E. coli nodules? I don't know.
Any other questions?
You know, I think today we've heard a couple of times already that yield comes through improvements in genetic gain and also management practice. Like we heard this morning in another session, that management practice are only 33% of yields in the debate. I think I'm going to suggest that we quit thinking of nitrogen as a single contributor to yield, that echoing Fernando's statement is to consider the physiological basis behind nitrogen, that it would appear that nitrogen supporting leaf growth and retention, or photosynthate, puts that 60 pounds of photosynthate that Emerson is showing us, and only 5 pounds of nitrogen in the seed. So the more we can do to support leaf growth, whether it's over the long haul of the plant, if the residual nitrogen supports leaf growth for the whole growth of the plant, great. That's giving us the photosynthate that's pumping in what we need for yield. I'm suggesting we ask our breeders, look into this question as well, that maybe it's nitrogen concentration in leaf, and we found that out today for Sean's data, or is it, and how does that affect photosynthesis rate or total volume or the retention thereof? But just more than one single question, put on some in, you're going to get yield. What is it that's causing it?
So
I think something also that's interesting that came out of this decade study that Sean was talking about is that actually over generations of breeding, we've actually made the date of flowering earlier. And I think that comes back to this whole sink question, that we're now actually putting pods on plants earlier, but perhaps we're creating these sinks earlier. For me as a breeder, it just seems silly to just put a bunch of extra leaves on plants in order for there to be a sink that we can store things. Why not just put it directly into seeds earlier, as opposed to having more leaves than we actually need?
I think you're right about the early planting. I think that everything that I've seen agrees with y'all's conclusions. And you're flowering earlier, you're putting on pods earlier, you're lengthening the reproductive period. And these are all key factors, I think, that going in produce a larger plant with a greater sink. And whether that's stimulating photosynthesis or not, having the flowering and the lengthening of the reproductive periods, I think, are real key.
I think one other aspect of that, Emerson, you made a comment about finessing. And if you look at greater nitrogen concentration in the leaves and you're looking at when seed fill is coming in, you know, if we get a cold snap, right, 50 degrees, and if we have more nitrogen in the leaves, okay, they're more apt to still bounce back. But if we've got leaves that are really depleted on the nitrogen side, they're not going to bounce back as readily. I think they're using that article or doing this years ago. So that could be something else that's playing into this big picture of seed fill period, senescence, nitrogen content.
That more nitrogen leaves doesn't mean more photosynthesis.
Right.
Because you know that nitrogen leaves that is accumulated through viscol, most of the nitrogen. But there is part of nitrogen that is accumulated in certain organisms that have no viscol, no photosynthesis activity. Because I believe that the plants are taking a lot of nitrogen between R1 and R5, and this is toxic for the plant actually. So they have to accumulate absolutely another structure.
Did you
find the CJ is quite a lot of things there that's showing how
Yeah, we probably should put
a call
for just so
people look like they were.
They can continue discussion.
2.5% is a huge amount of nitrogen that is not used for nothing. So you measure a lot of nitrogen in the leaves, in the sand plant, but then most of this nitrogen is not used by the crop. So this has to be with the steam sourcing relationship if you increase the number of pods.
I would probably add to the point that I was mentioning before. I think sometimes it depends on the mobilization efficiency. We are seeing, for example, in high yielding situations that still you have a mobilization and harvest index of nitrogen that is still from 0.6. So that means that you are still leaving some nitrogen that is probably falling in the leaves. So if you are measuring maybe some carbon nitrogen ratio in the leaves, you might probably be surprised to see that it might be, I mean, very close relationship, I mean, there and what's going on with the mobilization efficiency. Another point that you show there in your information is that it's not really changed on the stem concentrations. And usually, I mean, we are seeing sometimes when you have more the space, less competition, or if you have more resources, I mean, less tend to accumulate, use the stem as a reservoir, more common. So that's another question, maybe. It might be something that we should probably be thinking about. I mean, maybe, I think that the main message is, I think, that I'm getting from the panel also is like strategies of, I mean, on the physiology side, I mean, the soil, and then trying to take a look through all the components together is probably the key. And I think that we are looking into this only just as a response and see, apply and see how, what is the response, apply and see what is the response. We are really thinking so much about working and trying to get some search for indicators and trying to get some, take a look to the physiology, just the history, and take a look to the past and see what we have.
I need to cut this off, but it is 4 o'clock. I know there's a poster session. I think Ignacio's judge, so he's been running around all day. But I thank you guys for attending, and I thank the panelists and the speakers for their participation. And I'm very happy you had such a great crowd. So
yep.
Thank you.